On She'll Kill, we pair a crypto with a riveting true crime case, weaving together the worlds of innovation and investigation. Today, we shed light on a groundbreaking project before delving into a dark mystery. Stay curious and ready for more.
Hello and welcome to She'll Kill. I'm Chip Mahoney, and this is my podcast where I pair crypto and a crime together at the same time in a unique fusion of finance and mystery. And today it's a really interesting pairing because I am chasing the headlines with the true crime, speaking of the two Kansas moms who went missing recently, but no longer missing because two bodies have been found in that case, and I've got a lot to say about it. But I'm going to start with the crypto and a project that I don't think you should miss, especially if you're new to crypto. There's still some time here, and that's Aerodrome Finance, something I like. I'm going to tell you about it. So thanks for being here today with me on She'll Kill, and I've got that for you next. Thanks for tuning in. This is the audio version, but if you like video, there's YouTube, there's TikTok and whatnot. Another reason to subscribe, come back for more, because I will have more for you just about every new week. A new crypto review paired with a riveting true crime case, a real mystery like I like to do here at She'll Kill, because this podcast is for true crime fans, but also new people in crypto, new adopters, gonna have FOMO when Bitcoin hits 100,000, everybody's freaking out. So you got to learn this stuff now is my advice. And so if you know anyone else like yourself who loves true crime, wants to learn about crypto, please leave a review, make a recommendation, and share with someone, because I will always have more for you and anyone you want to recommend. If you have heard me before, and it wasn't just a drive-by, as I like to say, you're dropping the clip, pulling the crossover SUV back around, know that I do appreciate that OG kind of respect. Although I am a DeFi expert, I promise not to fire back on you with a bunch of technical jargon I know you don't need. You just need to know enough about the project to make a sound decision one way or the other. Because the thing about crypto is just not to miss out on the opportunity, and don't miss out what I have for you next about Aerodrome. Aerodrome Finance, ticker symbol Aero. This is a relatively new crypto project within the last couple months. However, it's kind of exploded. It's gone from like 8 cents to around $1.80 at the time of this recording. That's a pretty good return, especially for something brand new. This is a project that is backed by Coinbase, and that's something I'm going to talk about here today, why I think Coinbase is really important. Aerodrome is about 2 months old. It's a decentralized exchange, also known as a DEX. That's where you can go on that website, you can connect a DeFi wallet, and you can trade for other tokens that aren't necessarily on Coinbase. And it's always good to get on some good projects at the ground level. And also on a DEX, you can provide liquidity, because that's the difference between a DEX and a centralized exchange like Coinbase is liquidity. Users on a DEX are the ones who provide liquidity via the liquidity pools. Because in crypto, where liquidity flows, that's where you should go. And there's a lot of it happening right now on Aero. If you go to CoinMarketCap, as I always recommend in the episodes where I feature the cryptos, talk about CoinMarketCap. It's a great starting place to get familiar with crypto. But if you look at Aero there, you're not going to see the market cap reflect truly what it is, because it's closing in on $1 billion market cap. And that would put it in the top 100, but you're not going to find it there right now. It's just not reporting properly. I don't know if they'll fix that, but this is a top 100 crypto project within only about 2 months. I've seen cryptos for 3 or 4 years not break the top 100. This did it. And one of the main reasons why is because it is a great project for sure, but it's part of the Coinbase narrative. And that's something that I've realized is important, at least right for now, because Coinbase is positioned so well. They are a publicly traded company. They have a strong stock price. They've done well in their relationships with all the major players, even the government. And they've really paved the way over the last 10 years for people in the United States to get involved with crypto, especially in other parts of the world, of course, where crypto is way more accepted by the governments. But here they've fought hard. And I think they're well positioned for this bull run that we're about to see, I think, because Bitcoin is going to go through the halving event, which is taking place in a few days. That's where the rewards are cut in half for the miners who mine the Bitcoin, creating more scarcity, I think, and that's just going to grow up that demand. So that's a nice signal. And then for Arrow on April 22nd, something called Slipstream is going to be integrated. And that, I think that has to do with liquidity. And that's another bump up for this project. So right now, at the time of this recording, getting out there, this is something for people to listen to just think about a top project, but also what Coinbase is doing. They're connected to everybody and, or everybody who's anybody in crypto. And also they have Coinbase Ventures. So their venture capital backs a lot of these projects and they have vested interests. So whatever Coinbase is doing, I feel they're going to do really well. You want volume, you want liquidity on DEXs, and you want to kind of rotate in the narrative about what Coinbase is doing and what BlackRock is doing and what these guys are doing, because they're all connected somehow, some way. And you want to get quality over quantity, because there's way too many cryptos out there and it's kind of hard to find the best quality. And I would say Arrow is a top quality project. Full disclosure, I do own some Arrow. And yeah, I'm kind of kicking myself I wasn't able to get in at 8 cents and kind of go up 20x at least on this. But I think there's a lot of room for growth right now in crypto. There is a Wells notice, which is from our friendly people over at the SEC. Wells notice on Uniswap, which is the biggest DEX there is. And that might pave the way for Aerodrome to gain even more market share. Although I would say in crypto, I want every solid project to do well, but that's happening right now. And it might be another signal for Arrow to do pretty well, because I do think the master plan from Coinbase perspective is to use Aerodrome as the gateway for new people in crypto to be those first time adopters, because a lot of time as a first person in crypto, it can be overwhelming. And this is kind of a way to introduce DeFi to users and onboard them into Web3, because there are still hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people that need to be onboarded, and they got to have it made easy for them, like one click and they're done. And so they're putting good inroads there, I would say. They're building inroads to that. And I think that's part of what Coinbase is doing. So I think that's why it could be top project for the future. So Aerodrome, ticker symbol Arrow, only been around for about 2 months, connected to Coinbase. Anything connected to Coinbase right now, I think, is positioned to do well. And you want to get within that narrative. At least that's my advice. But take it for your own, do your own research. And if you decide to get involved, at least you know that when you go on Coinbase, you can purchase it there. And that's one of the best things, is that you can get Arrow right on Coinbase. You don't have to go to the DEX to get it. You don't have to go to Aerodrome to get Arrow. That's where you could trade Arrow for something else, but you could just participate through Coinbase. Think about that one. As I transition here to the true crime and get into the story here about the two Kansas moms, and I'm chasing that headline, because Aerodrome is probably going to be headline in the future. I mean, once it gets to 2 billion market cap, 3 billion market cap, I think more mainstream will be talking about it. But this is a mainstream case for true crime. The two moms who went missing on March 30th, looks like they were cut off at the pass as they were trying to pick up the kids. One of them was there to support that effort. And I do believe that person was collateral damage, but it was a bitter custody battle. Really seems like that was playing out here. And one of the crazy, interesting things I'm going to talk about in these custody battles is something that I see. And I'm going to share that with you next here on Chill Kill, because it's a tragic case, but it's really important to think about because it's not just this case about the moms. It's other ones I've seen. And I got that for you next. The two missing moms from Kansas. That's been a national headline for over a week now. I believe this happened on March 30th. And there's a lot of intricacies to this case. So I probably can sketch it out pretty well, but there's a lot of moving parts. And so the way that I'll break it down here is probably not mention names because it can get really confusing. And I'm just going to assume that you followed it on the news because it is a big headline. The two moms who went missing, but now authorities have found two bodies. The car looked like it was cut off at the pass in an isolated area. It looks like a double murder took place in the car or around the car because there was blood. And they say they found two bodies. So you can read about that, of course. But here's some of the interesting things before I get into the crazy interesting. And maybe interesting is not the right word because it's a murder case, but it's just something I see in other cases that it's worth talking about. First of all, a custody battle over kids is a stressful situation. It's one of the things that is a catalyst to a lot of murder suicides and just explosive behavior in people. It's really tough dealing with courts and lawyers. Is even worse. I mean, it's just a bad situation. But this is what was set up here with one mom, one Kansas mom, and then the other one who was about, I think, 10 years older, who was supervising the visits. I believe that was the setup. So the supervisor here, I think, was collateral damage. However, I do think that the killers were like, hey, we want to kill this person too, because they're involved with the mother who is trying to get full custody of the kids, not her kids, as a lot of reports would say, or news media would use to say that it's the mother's kids, because they never say they just say her, they never say him. So in everything I've read, they said, or at least the people have been quoted as saying her kids. That's how it was thought of, that she's getting full custody of her kids, even though the kids belong to both parents. So technically, they should say their kids, because that's the truth. So people get possessive. They want 100% control of it. And usually with the media, usually with quotes from people, they say it's one-sided. They rarely say it's his kids. They always say it's her kids. So that's what I read about. They wanted full custody. She wanted full custody of her kids. But on the other side of that coin was not the father of the kids, but the mother of the father, the grandma on the other side. Because if the wife wanted full custody and said it's her kids, if she wins that battle, then she takes 100% away from the husband or the ex-husband, but also the mother of the ex-husband, which is the grandma, on the other side. Now, I've seen that as a catalyst for murders and other cases. And another one I'm going to point out here that just happened as well, that involved a grandfather. It's a really terrible situation, but this is where it gets amped up to where people cannot think straight. And that's what I see has happened here. You have one younger mother going to get the kids in another state, I believe crossing Kansas into Oklahoma to do a visit and get the kids, I think. And then you had the supervisor with her in the vehicle traveling to that appointment. And somewhere along the way, they got cut off at the pass that the grandma, who is the mother of the ex, you know, the husband, the ex, her and a couple cohorts cut these two off at the pass, and they shoot them up. They kill them because this thing resulted, this custody battle resulted in the grandmother probably thinking this is the only thing that she could do. Kill the mother, get her out of the equation, and somehow get control of those kids because the grandmother wanted her grandchildren. I'm sure the father, the ex of the woman who was killed, wanted their kids, not his kids. However, I think it seemed to be as that was perceived in this situation that the supervisor, who was about 10 years older than the person she was supporting, the other woman who was killed, they probably thought that she was pulling some strings and really advocating for the mother to have 100% control or custody of the kids. So she's a problem as well. And she doesn't know how dangerous of a situation she's in. I don't think she knew how dangerous this situation would play out. So what I'm saying here is that the murders of these two women, I think, was set up by the grandma on the other side. The murders of about 8 family members in Piketon, Ohio, I think it was, one of the biggest cases for these family-style murders was set up by the grandma on the other side because of a custody battle with the younger people in the family, between two rival families or something of that nature. I haven't done much research on that case, but I do know about it. But the catalyst was the grandma on the other side. The grandma set it up, put it in motion. Here, in this case, the two Kansas mom who went missing, then they were killed, cut off at the pass in this appointment between two states that they were traveling, Kansas and Oklahoma, in that border area, set up by the grandma. That's what I think. In another state, in Nevada, just happened recently where another custody battle was taking place. It wasn't a national headline. It was more localized, but this happened at the same time. Las Vegas, Summerlin area, nice area. A well-known lawyer was in a custody battle with his new wife for custody of the kids. And they're having negotiations about custody. The grandfather is actually the lawyer on the other side of the table. He's on the other side of the table in these negotiations. I don't think his son, who was married to the woman, the ex, I don't think his son was present. And the grandfather was handling negotiation because he had been a lawyer in Las Vegas area for, I believe, over 40 years, pretty well known as well. But the new husband, the new hubs, older gentleman, about 25 years difference between him and his new wife, are in this discussion. I think it was a deposition. And you got to imagine how difficult that is, how strenuous it is. The grandfather, who is the lawyer on the other side representing his son for the kids, not his kids or her kids, but the kids, pulls out a gun, shoots the other lawyer, shoots the woman who is his ex-daughter-in-law, and then he kills himself because life sucks sometimes, and that's how it ended. The grandfather was the catalyst, not the father who's that was his kids and her kids, that their kids together, the grandfather. Once she gets full custody of the kids on the other side of the table, the grandfather doesn't have shit. That's why he did what he did. So In the case of the Kansas moms, the grandmother is the catalyst. In my opinion, it's what I've seen before. In the Piketon massacre, Piketon, Ohio, 8 family members massacred. The grandmother was the catalyst. And in Vegas recently, the catalyst, the grandfather, who, strangely enough, was the lawyer representing the son in this custody, which I believe was a deposition taking place at the other lawyer's office, which for the ex-wife or the ex on the other side of the table was her new husband. And I believe that they had children together, at least one child. So they're on one side of the table trying to straighten things out for her to make sure she's got a new husband. But the kids need to go to her. She wants them 100%. That sucks. It's a really, really terrible situation. And guess what? Within all these cases, it ends in murder because it's so terrible. And I think it has to do with how people perceive the kids as being theirs, as possessive for only one. And I've heard a judge say this in court before. I was pretty surprised to hear it when on YouTube, I think it was recently I saw this, where in a custody dispute in court, the judge interrupted the mother of the children and said, wait a minute, it's not your kids, it's both of your kids. You have these equally, because she was talking like, they're my kids. I want my kids. And it was a lady judge as well. And I was surprised by it. But I think that's the catalyst for the murder. You know, if you think about other homicides and things that happen, the motive, the catalyst is money. It's some motive that is pretty well seen in a lot of different crimes. This motive has to do with the possession of the kids. The grandfather in Vegas isn't going to be able to see the kids because she's going to get 100% of the kids, which she's saying are her kids. So he doesn't have grandchildren. The grandmother here that's set up this as the catalyst in this Kansas mom attack, she's not going to see the grandkids. And maybe she's saying that they're her grandkids. And maybe she's taking possession of it that way. And the only solution is with the gun, because they're murderous type people and they commit murder, and they did. And the other woman, the older woman who is about 39 years old, who's supervising the visits and being the liaison there, she's got to die because she's a problem. And by her being involved, that could relate to, you know, the kids never being seen again, you know, with full custody. It's a problem. It's not just this case. I've seen it in multiple cases. And I think it has to do with that possession, that both parents don't see it as their kids together because they're no longer together. Then they think of it as single possession. They're my kids. No, they're my kids. They're not our kids. And that sucks. It sucks for everybody. Well, I hope you think this episode didn't suck, because there's some true crime here that I think something can be learned for the future. And then, of course, crypto, that if you take advantage of it, there's some profits there to be had. So thanks for joining me on this episode of She'll Kill. I have more for you in the future, but in this one, I'm out. Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe and join us again as we uncover the fascinating connection between two seemingly disparate worlds. Until next time.